I know that when people look at the prophecies, people outside look at the prophecies, so often they have this idea that God's up there throwing thunderbolts, and they see the prophecies as just meanly a means that God intervenes in these areas. But you know, over in James 1, it talks about how, well, let's just turn over to James 1. James 1, I'll just turn over there just briefly. And just remind us what it says. Now, it's being addressed to the church predominantly here, yes. And certainly God does make intervention. He did in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, and he does make intervention. He will make an intervention at the end time. But it says, let no man in verse 13 say that when he's tempted or tried, I'm tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he with any man. But every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. And when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. There is a progression. It comes from, if you like, the heart of man. Christ talked about the heart of man precedes, you know, all these various problems of adultery, fornication, and so on. And really, what we look at are the consequences so often of our action. And really, when we think about it, that has got to be the case, because it's the reason why we have this present evil age. It's the reason why this age is allowed to exist, is so the aversion therapy that is there allows us to see society and really see what the product of Satan's way, Satan's mindset, really brings. Now, when we're looking at things like what we're looking at the moment, with the money and the financial system, this is the big piece of news that we have at this present time. And certainly that, according to what Mr. Armstrong was saying, I think I quoted in the update this week, in fact, I know I quoted in the update this week, for the Plain Truth from December 63, where Mr. Armstrong said that so long as present German prosperity continues, the Nazi takeover will not be possible. But should any severe threat to that hard-won prosperity come, then the picture will change violently in Germany, and your Bible predicts a great trade war between the economic powers in Europe and the United States, and predicts terrible financial collapse of this country. So he's talking about the United States and talking about a financial collapse that would come. Now, he didn't see a complete collapse in his lifetime, but certainly when we are looking at the world scene, this is why this particular crisis that's engulfing the world at the moment, and on today's paper, today's paper, it says, city hit by the biggest crisis for a decade. Is this going to be the crisis that is going to bring about the violent effects within Germany, within Europe? And remember, it's not just Germany, it is Europe. It is a European Holy Roman Empire that is going to come up again, but there's going to be a German at its head, and Germany is certainly going to be playing a predominant part. But this particular crisis, city hit by the biggest crisis for a decade, and there's another one here. This is coming from, let's see, what's this? AP release from Washington. It talks about the Federal Reserve pumping another $38 billion into the U.S. financial system on Friday to stem the current turmoil. Now you say, well, where is that money coming from? And they do it, as I understand it. The Federal Reserve basically prints the notes. They're the ones responsible for printing the notes, so they print more money. And that obviously is fueling inflation. It therefore jeopardizes the value of the dollar. But the world share, this is from BBC News, world share fall on credit fears. And it is this subprime mortgage market in the United States that seems to have triggered this current crisis that we see. And yet, you know, there's a great deal more going on behind the scenes. And what we need to understand, if you turn over to Amos chapter 8, in Amos chapter 8, we find in Amos chapter 8, Hosea, Joel, Amos, a passage here. It says in verse 4, it says, hear this, O you that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone, that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath, that we may sell forth wheat, making the ephah small? And even when you look at this on the present sense, they've eliminated even the Sabbath that they did have in the Sunday that they had held. That has been wiped out today. But notice it says, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit. They print money without the value behind that money. And this is being done not just on an individual scale, it's being done on a national scale, and the governments are actually doing that. It is interesting, I just had this little phrase that came from Eric Sykes' biography, but it says, "A man's wealth is in his head, it's not in the bank." If it's in the bank, then it belongs to somebody else. And I think that's jolly well true, it really is. That if it's in the bank, it actually belongs to somebody else. And it is this confidence that they try and ensue in the banking system. But it goes in verse 6 here of Amos 8. It says that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes. Yes, sell the refuse of the wheat, and the Eternal has sworn by the excellency of Jacob, surely I will never forget any of their works. Shall not the land tremble for this, and every one mourn that dwells therein? And it shall rise up wholly as a flood, and it will be cast and drowned as if a flood of Egypt. In other words, all of a sudden, the wall will break and the entire collapse. And it's going to come, not necessarily by God manipulating it. God doesn't really have to manipulate it. The economy is such that if people do this, if they go ahead and make the ephah small, the shekel great, they're trying to grab as much as they can, eventually it will rebound on them. And you get other headlines. This is again from Saturday. France seeks to control of EU central bank decisions. So again, France is manipulating her particular place. We look at what's happening down in Mugabe's Zimbabwe, and Mugabe's price control brings Zimbabwe's industry to a standstill. It says there should be 63 workers at the factory in Bulawayo, but instead the managing director stands alone in a deserted production room because it just simply doesn't work. Another one here, again, just showing where this is actually coming from. It's coming from an attitude and frame of mind. It says unfunded public pensions are the private misery for taxpayers. And it goes in, it says, I'm trying to save money, so I'm not paying into a pension. This comment comes from a fellow journalist who said it without irony. In black and white, her logic seems perverse, but I know precisely what she meant. For many people, putting money in a pension scheme is not the same as saving. Unlike with 20 pence pieces in a jam jar or regular deposits in a post office account, you can't readily observe an accumulation of wealth. And what then has happened is the government has gone in and has actually raided that wealth in this country. And has, you know, they give guarantees for the pension funds. You make your prediction on that. And then you find later on that those funds have been raided by some stealth tax. And they have clawed off literally millions, if not, I think, billions, quite frankly, from the pension funds. And the solution that comes out of this, this kind of mentality, here's a comment from yesterday's paper, says, make your products harder to steal, Brown Advisor tells firms. It says, companies should have to have a duty to make their products more difficult to steal, Gordon Brown's advisor on crime and design said yesterday. So again, they're getting the things upside down. At the same time as well, you have gambling. It says internet gambling adverts on TV are a recipe for disaster. Government plans to allow internet gambling advertisements on television for the first time were branded a recipe for disaster last night by the Royal College of Psychiatrists. And it goes and gives that another article as well on the same subject, where one of Gordon Brown's early initiatives as Prime Minister, designed to distance himself from the Blair years, was to kill off the plans for a super casino. And it was made clear that the whole future of casinos in Britain would be placed under review. Any indication the government was last seeing the moral flaw in the argument that the local economy can be revived by more gambling would, though, be deceptive. From next month, the provision of the new Gambling Act allows for ever more accessible forms of gambling in this country, and bookmakers will be able to stay open in the evenings, all year round, and so on. Now, you read these various news items, and you don't really tie them in to the problems that are in the financial markets today, but it is. The financial attitude of mind that is being brought out here in Amos, where it says, we'll buy the poor for silver, the needy for a pair of shoes. We'll let the new moon be gone. Let the restraints be taken away so that we can make the ephah small and the shekel great and falsify the balances by deceit. And that concept is certainly something that we are now seeing the results of. We're seeing that the results within the stock market jitters. And if it goes its course, and certainly there is pressure mounting from areas like China, that it could, in fact, bring down America completely. That could be the thing. Maybe it probably would be a combination of things, but that could be one of the things that just brings America's current strength in the world low enough so that the prophecies can, in fact, take place. Now, when we look at agriculture, turn over to Leviticus 18. Leviticus 18. Something actually happened, Leviticus 18, within the land. And you say, well, how can this, how can these things, where in Leviticus 18 it's talking about approaching any that's near any of kin, the nakedness of your father's wife, you'll not uncover, or your daughter, you shouldn't lie with mankind, you know, there's no homosexuality, you don't go ahead and have bestiality, and all these other various things that are being mentioned within this section. And it finally says in verse 24, it says, do not defile yourself in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled that I cast out before you. And the land is defiled, therefore I do visit the iniquity upon it, and the land itself vomits out her inhabitants. And again, it's not a case that God goes in there and therefore gets rid of. It's a case that the land itself will vomit out the inhabitants. And it goes on. It says in verse 30, therefore you shall keep my ordinances, that you commit not any one of these abominable customs which are committed before you, that you do not defile yourselves therein. Verse 28, that the land does not spew you out also when you defile it, as it spewed out the nations that were before you. It was a repercussion of what they were doing. And you say, well, how can that be the case? Well, when we look at this foot and mouth outbreak that is currently happening over here, we find things like Brown confident the outbreak has been contained, which of course he's got to say. And then it goes on, no Y virus leak could be an accident, says former laboratory head. Sabotage is the most likely explanation for the foot and mouth outbreak, one of the scientists at the heart of the crisis claimed yesterday. And tests have been carried out throughout the week at the Purbright Research Complex in Surrey, and so on. But it's interesting that at the same paper, and it's in Friday's paper, it says legionnaires at the foot and mouth lab. It says a government-run laboratory in the center of the foot and mouth outbreak was now at the center of a fresh health scare last night after a worker contracted Legionnaire's disease. Now, Legionnaire's disease is where you have a air conditioning plant that has water in it and it's not properly treated, and therefore you get droplets of water where the bacteria are able to, I think it's a bacteria, are able to breed. And you breathe this mist in, and therefore you've got a problem. Your lungs become infected. Now, it says, the Health Protection Agency said it was investigating the Institute for Animal Health at Purbright in Surrey after finding small amounts of the Legionella bacteria in a building that the man, a contractor, was based. So it is not just, if you are sloppy in one area, you will be sloppy in other areas as well. And this is, in fact, what you find within agriculture. When you see here in agriculture that the land spews you not out, the repercussions do not come from one specific thing. It comes from a combination of things that occurs. Let me read you a review here. This is coming from today's paper, again, talking about the current crisis. And it says, readers, tether me to a mountainside and leave me to perish. Last week in these pages, I wrote that despite floods and other quasi-biblical plagues, notice what it says, quasi-biblical plagues. Are they quasi? I don't think they are. They probably are biblical plagues. Farming was beginning to emerge from the figurative 7 lean years, actually about double that it had been suffering. My words would hardly have been worse timed, as at the beginning of Monty Python, a very large foot descends from the clouds to squash my talk of green shoots. It said the front page of the same day's paper carried the first news of the foot and mouth outbreak in Surrey. There have now been 2 confirmed cases, and news yesterday that while cattle at one suspect farm have been cleared, test results on another outside the surveillance zone are actually awaited. Foot and mouth came out of a clear blue sky, and what I said last week still stands. There is a growing world shortage of food. The demand from China and other booming economies is growing, just as productivity in Australia and elsewhere is becoming unreliable amid scorching temperatures and droughts, and prices are rising. And so we find ourselves in this situation. But how do these things actually fit in? Well, again, this is another one. This is from about a month ago. I clipped this out where it says life just got a lot more complicated, and it's talking here about the alphabet of life, about the DNA code and how RNA fits into it. And I'm not going to read the article, but it goes into the fact that when the crucial timing is that when the DNA unfolds itself. Before, they thought about 1.5%, that's very, very small amount, of the DNA was actually used to define the animal or the plant or whatever. But now they're finding that all this other 90-odd percent that they discarded as junk is in fact not junk, but the whole thing uncoils, groups into a mass, and becomes a three-dimensional molecule that then conveys its information as to how the cell has got to behave. And you know, they look at that, and turn over to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. They look at things like this, and they deliberately suppress the inescapable truth that there is a designer, that there is a great being that has designed all of these things. And it says, for the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all unrighteousness, ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, as is better translated. And it says, verse 20, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so they're without excuse. And then it flows from there into sexual perversion, which we've just read about over in Leviticus 18. And then it goes into our knowledge, which it says in verse 28, they didn't like to retain God in their knowledge, their system, their agricultural science, for instance. And then it explodes into all aspects of society as it goes in here. It says, they then have a reprobate mind to do those things that are not proper, being filled with unrighteousness, fornication, which includes things like homosexuality and so on, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, and it just pours, the whole thing just pours out. There's an article I saw on the problem that we're currently having, particularly in the United States, on the bees. And I think this illustrates the mindset. You know, how can, when we look at the BSE problem that we had over here, and it basically came about by man feeding offal from beef animals and sheep, from sheep and specifically with scrapie, to the cattle as their protein. Ridiculous. Cows do not eat that kind of protein, except when they've just given birth, they'll eat the afterbirth. That's the only time that you'll find a cow naturally eating that kind of protein. So they hide it with molasses and various other things in the feed, and then they wonder, well, why have we got this terrible disease that suddenly come about? Let's look at the bee situation. It says, we've been collecting samples from CCD, that's colony collapse disorder, colonies, and healthy colonies to compare them. It says, but when you get them under the microscope, nearly all the bees look sick. I've done 1,000 of these autopsies in 3 months, and I tell you, it's really difficult to find a healthy-looking bee. This one, like so many CCD bees, has a shocking amount of disease symptoms. Its venom stack and sting gland are swollen and discolored, indicating infection. Its kidneys are blackened, its intestines are scarred, and it was clearly suffering from terrible constipation. The contents of its rectum should be soft, but this is hard, undigested, and really packed in there. So it's a problem with what they're eating, presumably, something is causing this. It says, with this we see a lot. These bees can't relieve themselves, but we have no idea why or what it means. There are also white nodules and long blue or green strands showing up inside some bees, and we're still scratching our heads about those, Van Engelsdorp says. One thing is clear, that the immune system in CCD bees are severely compromised, and one theory is that the CCD is analogous to AIDS. Secondary infections from bacteria and funguses are taking advantage of their weakened immune systems and leaving the blackening and scarring of the internal organs. But what's attacking or degrading their immune systems? Andrei leans towards an environmental explanation. Before bees, he was studying the effects of polluted stream water on amphibians and saw some similarities. I've come to think that all pollutants and insecticides we're putting into the environment are having an effect on the bees. Maybe they're building up to a point where the bee's immune system collapses, and then all these other infections come in, but that's just my guess because I'm no expert. The interesting thing is when he then starts to describe the American bee honey, you know, the bee society, the society of bee producers, beekeepers. It says a more high-tech, profit-driven and monoculture American agribusiness has become, with laser-leveled fields stretching across the horizon. If you go around Monterey and into the San Joaquin Valley over in California there, they really are. They're completely laser-leveled. And the reason for that is so that they can irrigate them properly, growing lucerne and other things. All growing the same crop. The more dependent it has become on these few hundred migratory beekeepers. Now, these migratory beekeepers, they take bees in their thousands of hives. It says here, it says, bees cannot survive in a place where only one crop grows. Now, you can't have bees in a monoculture. It doesn't, because the bees haven't got anything to eat. It says, neither can other pollinators, except for the few weeks a year when that plant is in bloom, there's nothing for them to eat. Pollination fees are already increasing because of the shortage of bees, and if the CCD die-offs continue and more beekeepers go out of business, the effects on agriculture will be rapid and dramatic. Now, this is happening at the same time as we've got this economic problem in the States. It's coming from a mindset, and look at what the mindset is. It says the most profitable crop in California these days, it says, is almonds, worth $2.34 billion a year. In the state's Central Valley, the almond orchards covered more than 500,000 acres. Every February, more than half the honeybees in America, notice that, half the honeybees in America, 10 billion or so, arrive by truck to pollinate the pink blossoms. The profits from almonds, buoyed by recent studies suggesting health benefits, are so irresistible that farmers are planting more and more trees. So that's what's basically happened. The lifestyle, it goes on then, it says, the lifestyle of the average modern honeybee in America, living on the road in overcrowded hives, stacked up in juggernauts, short on fresh air, subject to overheating, fed on corn or sucrose syrup and protein supplements to keep them going between nectar-rich crops, treated with miticides, moved relentlessly from one crop to the next. Isn't this a profoundly unnatural way for a bee to live? Now, he goes on and says, look, the problem is also affecting organic bees that are stationary. But you look at what's actually happening, and you look at, where you've got literally thousands of hives. There's this one guy that's being mentioned, a 58-year-old Pennsylvanian, who drives up and down the country with some or all of his 3,000 hives in a fleet of juggernauts. Last November, he checked on a group of 400 hives that he'd taken to Florida a month previously, and all but 40 were empty. They'd gone. The bees had disappeared. 440. He says that some of his friends, they've literally put the hives there, and they've all but maybe a handful, maybe five, survived. And it's interesting that the bees don't go back to the hives. They've been destroyed either. So you see, you have this mentality. You have this mentality of trying to grab as much as you can from the environment. It's a mentality that denies that there is a God that designed all of this. There's your initial perversion. And it goes into all the other kinds of perverted attitudes of mind. And the result is what we see. And let's take another area. What about leadership? Turn over to Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3, it says, for behold, the Lord, the Eternal of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem, Judah, the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. Now, you wonder who it's actually talking to, and you wonder, in fact, if it's even talking about the church to some degree here. But it says, the mighty man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man, the counselor, and the cunning artifactor, and the eloquent orator. And I will give children to their princes, babes will rule over them, and the people shall be oppressed. And it says, as for my people, verse 12, children are their oppressors, women rule over them. My people, those that lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. And where's it coming from? It's coming from the attitude of mind that we found over in Romans 1. It's coming from an attitude of mind that is denied that there is a God and will not listen to. They refuse to listen to it. And they wonder why there's problems. Over here in the UK, we have a problem, particularly in the education area. And that is that boys are literally failing at school. And let me read what the Daily Telegraph of today's paper. And again, I've just basically picked up most of this from today's and yesterday's paper. It says, feminizing education is of benefit to no one. This week began with the news that 4 out of 10 children are virtually illiterate and innumerate when they leave primary school. It ends with the revelation that more than a quarter of boys did not gain a single good GCSE last year. Both situations are a disgrace. Neither is exactly surprising, but the second statistic usefully points us towards a major and sometimes overlooked element of the crisis in British schools, the failure to educate boys. Now, this wasn't the case years ago. It simply was not the case. It says the primary school and GCSE statistics come from different sources and so are not directly comparable. But what seems beyond doubt is this, that the case of boys, the handicapped of a mediocre primary school's education, is made worse by a secondary school curriculum that plays to the strength of girls. Now, we read in Isaiah 3, and we read a problem. There's going to be a problem in leadership. So the people are not going to be able to make rational decisions, and the leadership is coming out of the school system. It says the typical adolescent male is a noisy creature with a short attention span, but his fidgety restlessness also reflects a competitive spirit that can produce unexpected triumphs in the examination halls as well as on the sports ground. And that is true. It talks about the empire of the UK, of Great Britain was made on the playing fields of Eton. The leaders of the entire country were. It says, since the introduction of GCSEs in the late 1980s, however, the school environment has been subtly adjusted in a way that minimizes the natural advantages of the male and maximizes those of the female. An emphasis on coursework favors the conscientious, and girls are often very conscientious. Teenage boys are less so, to put it mildly, and it's true. Then came the news from A-levels, whose emphasis on modules. How did the previous generation survive without modules? Further played down the competitive spirit that kicks into action when the words turn your papers over now. And that is, it is. It's something right. There's a goal that you can go for. In some state school, classrooms have become anti-competitive, neglecting the, notice what it says, the problem-solving that boys traditionally enjoy. And what do you need for leadership? Problem-solving. That's exactly what you need. And so what are we getting? And when we see these problems within the country and see these difficulties within leadership in the country, where is it coming from? It's coming from a deviant mind that has implemented this within the school system. Just the same deviant mind that you find implementing the things within agriculture and implementing the things within society generally, within the financial markets as well. It says, neglecting the problem solving that boys traditionally enjoy, that is partly the result of the ideological prejudices of the educational establishment. But it may also have a more straightforward cause, this shortage of male teachers. Why is that? Because of this perverted attitude of mind that, you know, you've got to fish a child out with your feet. And that, which I brought out before, this problem that we ran across when we took the children one time to swimming, when we took our grandchildren swimming. According to government figures of 2006, the ratio of newly qualified female to male teachers under the age of 25 was approaching 7 to 1. 7 women to 1 man. This is ridiculous. This ridiculous state of affairs, given that boys slightly outnumber girls in Britain, the ratio doesn't reach 50-50 till the age of 30, It is no offence to excellent women teachers to say that the boys also need male role models in the classroom. In the long run, the feminisation of British education benefits no one, not even girls. We live in an increasingly competitive society that in reality must be reflecting a more robust style of teaching on the part of teachers in general. And the scandal is that because they are inappropriately educated, many boys and girls alike are destined to fall at the first hurdle. Now, that was one article there, and it's interesting, I saw in the computing magazine this morning that came. It says, ID cards marked for fast rollout. Treasury report will call for rapid take-up by citizens, says sources. Identity cards should be rolled out to citizens as quickly as possible, an influential Treasury-backed report will recommend to ministers this month. Sir James Crosby's review of private sector uses of the proposed biometric ID scheme was due to be published with the budget in March, and according to insiders, the former chief executive's report will be circulated internally in the coming weeks and be published when Parliament reconvenes early October. And they try and say, it says, it recognises that there are many ways for checking services to be used and a lot will be fine without the need for a huge IT net, and on it goes. Why? What are they doing it for? Again, what deviant mind has come up with this? Well, let me give you another article, this again coming from today's paper. ID cards could be the Big Brother's tax trap. Identity cards could provide a back door for the tax man to snoop on people's affairs using a database of national insurance numbers. The card system will use an existing NI database to log details, potentially making it easier for tax inspectors to keep tabs. Officials had hoped to base ID cards on a national identity register, but will instead use the consumer information system run by the Department of Work and Pensions. So basically what happens is you've got to prove your identity to get anything. So you have to show your identity card, they swipe it, and at the moment that happens, it can then be trawled, and they have a complete picture of where you've been, what you've bought, doesn't matter whether you even use cash. This is the kind of thing, this is the kind of twisted thinking that we've got, and what we have now are give children to be their princes and babes to be ruling over them. And it says, your leaders cause you to err and they destroy the way of your path. They have destroyed the fact that God exists and the fact that God demands that the governments of this world are submissive to his laws. And the results are not going to be something that he has to like throw thunderbolts on. They will be inevitable. He's already made these laws. You break them, they'll break you. And that's what's going to happen to the society. And we see it being reflected in our papers today. And yet we say, and we should be praying, thy kingdom come.